Arya Stark is to the Night King as Joe Biden will be to Trump.
Not bad, but to each to their own opinion.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast, streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I'm going to see how far I can get through all of this without fucking it up. So here we go. On today's show, we welcome back one of our favorite authors, Hans M. Hershey. His latest work, Reckoning, is part of a fantasy trilogy titled The Golden One, to be released this September. It joins its predecessors, Blooming and Deceit. The Golden One is an exciting new trilogy dealing with urgent topics affecting humanity today. We are also going to be joined by fellow podcaster and host of the Rote podcast and the voice behind the audio versions of The Golden One, Vance Bastian. More with our guest on the second half of the show. My name is Tom and I am your host. And as always, I'm here with my amazing co-host, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
good to be with you guys. It's Chris.
And welcome you all to The Dish. So we've got so much to do today. We've got a lot of people that we'll be talking to, a lot of stories that we want to talk about. Well, not a lot of stories, but, you know, we're going to jump into it.
It's busy.
Yeah, it's very busy today. So I want to just kick it off with perhaps some weekends and cocktails and all that good stuff. So why don't we do weekends first? So, Christopher, why don't you tell us what you did this weekend?
Trish, don't look at me like that. You're such a dick. You know that?
Why? Why am I a dick?
I went to visit some friends this weekend.
Yeah. She got around this weekend.
Friends in quotations.
Mm-hmm. Shut it. I had a nice weekend. Thursday night.
I'm sure you did.
Thursday night after work, I went to Long Island.
What's in Long Island?
Long Island.
Some friends of mine. And we hung out. It was a nice time. We relaxed Thursday night because I got there quite late. And then Friday. Friday I worked on, you know, doing homework during the day while my friends were at work. And then we went out for dinner, had some sushi, and then we went to a casino.
Of course he did.
And then, yeah, we just chilled.
And you lost $100.
Well, no, I lost 60.
How quick?
About 40 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. And the worst part is you can't smoke in their casinos. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, in Connecticut you can, but they're slowly reducing the places where you can actually go.
As long as you're on the casino floor, you can smoke. They have non-smoking sections of the casino, such as sections with slot machines or tables. But as long as you're on the main casino floor, you can smoke.
I would be the slot machine in the slot machine area.
Yeah, of course. We know that.
So, but that's fun. Yeah. So you went to a casino, and then what did you do when you got back?
I'm just getting
to see more friends?
I'm just getting prepped for my statistics exam coming up.
Nice.
Yeah.
You have an exam coming up on Wednesday.
Next Wednesday.
And you're going to be completing your associates, right? And then you move into your next program?
No. I have two more classes this summer.
Uh-huh.
And then five classes next semester, and then I will be completed at Gateway.
Nice. Well, I'm very proud of you because, you know, you for a moment there, we thought you were going to push it off, but finally you dug your heels in, and you're doing it. That's awesome.
I'm fighting hard. I'm keeping my GPA up, opening my options, getting some scholarships. Yeah, I'm. Turns out I'm a good student when I give a fuck.
Imagine that.
I know. Imagine that. So what my high school teachers would say about me now.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Well, you get that cocktail ready. I'm going to go ahead and throw it over to Trish. Trish, how was your weekend? Meh.
Yeah.
Meh.
Yeah.
Meh.
Meh.
What happened this weekend? So much happened this weekend.
I worked on Friday. I got somebody kicked out of the bar. That was fun.
Proud of you.
I heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Then on Saturday, I went to dinner with he who must not be named.
Mm-hmm.
Also heard about that.
It was a wonderful time, sort of. It was a good time. And then on Sunday, I did like adult things, like laundry and all that stuff. And then I went to a friend's place for dinner.
I have no news to verify that.
And then I went to work and went home and was irresponsible and stayed up until 3 a.m. watching Game of Thrones before going to bed and getting up for work at night.
Yeah, same here. So it was a big weekend. It was a big blockbuster weekend for movies and television shows. As we know, Avengers Endgame came out. I spoiled it for a lot of people online. Sorry.
Also heard that.
Sorry.
I hear a lot.
Oh, of course you do. And so it came out and it grossed well over what, like $1.2 billion? I mean, it's the biggest grossing film in a single weekend release.
It was $1.9 billion?
Yeah, it was insane. And so they made a lot of money. But then, of course, you know, Game of Thrones came out with their third episode. And this was the battle for Winterfell, or as they called it, the...
No, it's 39. 39 billion.
Well, 39? That's worldwide. We're talking about the...
Yeah, I believe domestically it like was 1.9 billion.
It was insane. But
somewhere in the 1.9 range or so, give or take.
Yeah. It was... Hey, listen, that's a lot of money.
Of course it's a lot of money. It's the record for film history.
It's insane.
I remember when Titanic was the world record.
Yeah, and then after Titanic it was Wonder Woman, and then after Wonder Woman it was something else, and now it's Endgame. But anyway, it's I believe close to 12 years of cinematic cinematic movies and things coming together and converging and really bringing an ending to all of these Marvel universe movies that have been put out, everything from, you know, Iron Man to what's the other ones? Ant-Man,
yeah, it's all Marvel comics.
Yeah, all of these. And Spider-Man, and all of that.
Wonder Woman, that's DC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Wonder Woman is DC, definitely DC. And she's the best. So basically, you know, they literally just brought the story to a close and things happened, and I'm not, you know, if you haven't seen it, go see it. But anyway, Game of Thrones, winter came for Winterfell, and shit went down, and the episode was incredible, and it was amazing. It was, let's just say that I had so much adrenaline watching that and so much anxiety that when I went to work both last night after the episode and this morning, I was still buzzing and I was still exasperated from, my body was literally telling me, you've used up so much adrenaline watching this show.
You're so obsessed. Like, I like it, but like... I was just tired today.
it was insane. And that final... So I'm not going to ruin the final scene for anyone, but I will tell you my favorite death. And in the show...
No, don't do that. Yeah, no, this is why you got in trouble before.
Listen, it's Monday. Don't get over it. Trust me. So one of my favorite deaths...
We do not approve of this.
I know. From season 7, and that was Olenna Tyrell. So last season, she went out, and she had like the best... closer of all exits. And then, of course, for this season, for this episode, one of the best to me was Lyanna Mormont. I mean, she went out with a bang. And she's not with us. I won't tell you how it happened because she was badass. That little girl was badass throughout her entire time on the show. But you'll need to go watch that episode and check it out.
I've seen a couple minutes of Game of Thrones when we were back at your last apartment, actually.
Uh-huh.
Back when PA was part of the show still. Mm-hmm. I remember that. And,
don't mention her name.
I didn't.
She'll get upset.
I didn't.
She'll get upset.
Regardless, whenever people mention Game of Thrones, all I think about is that South Park 2-part episode.
Oh, God.
What has to do with Black Friday? And Cartman keeps taking people into this random guy's garden.
Everything goes back to South Park.
Absolutely. And they have, J.H. Abrams? No, not Abrams. Hubbard? What's the fucking... Not Hubbard. Who's the...
J.J. Abrams, it was the director for the Star Wars films. George R.R. Martin is the writer for the Game of Thrones novels.
Wait, Abrams was the director for Star Wars?
Yes.
That wasn't...
He's
Spielberg?
He's directing
or
the next
George
one.
Lucas?
No, Lucas already sold the rights to...
Oh, for the new ones. I was like, wait a minute. What the fuck are you talking about? Ones. Regardless, when it comes to the episode, he's standing there and he's conducting the theme song for Game of Thrones. It's all like, wieners, big, big wieners, wieners, lots of big wieners. No one ever saw that?
No.
He's pretty much referencing that it's all about wieners.
It's really not. There was only one time.
Do they hang dong?
There was only one time where they showed a big wiener, and that was Hodor.
Did they show smaller wieners then, too, as well?
No, it was the only
one. So just one wiener that was exposed was a large wiener.
I feel like there were more penises than one.
I always thought that Game of Thrones hung dong.
Well, no. Well, they alluded to cutting Theon's dick off, right?
They cut his dick off?
In the show.
Or, like, cutting his dick scene out.
No, off.
Off.
Like literally chopping his penis off.
Yeah.
And they sent it to his father in a box.
Oh, well, I mean,
saying you no longer have a son.
Happy Father's Day.
Yeah, right? And he can't be the heir to the Iron Islands because he doesn't have a penis, which is why he was pushing for his sister Yara to become queen of the Iron Islands.
Now, what happened to her penis?
She has bigger balls than most people. Trust me, she's badass in the show. But anyway. Watch it.
That's amazing. Pretty much all I could contribute to this conversation.
It's amazing. It's the show. Like, for example, in Theon's case, there is no show that I've ever encountered in where you first see a character in season one and you sort of kind of, not into him, really. And then I really hate him in season two. And then I despise him in season three. And then I sort of feel bad for him in season four. And then he's redeeming himself and he's sort of kind of, And then really you are flat out like, oh my God, no, not Theon, right? That's how good of a show it is. And that's how well written some of these characters were.
Gave something else away.
Well, I was trying to move on past that. I was like, forget about what you just said. But that's a sign of a good actor. If an actor can push you through the emotions, especially like for me personally, when I watch a film or a TV show or a play, if I hate a character, that's a sign that actor is doing an incredible job. Like watching certain films where they literally make me despise the person that is being portrayed on stage or on screen. That's a sign of someone who is doing their fucking job.
Just to play devil's advocate.
Yes.
It's not just the actor.
Well, no.
Well, of course, it has to do with the writing. Of course,
the directing. Right.
Of course. But the actor, they're the ones who, the writing is important and the director is incredibly important. Mm-hmm. Without the script, there would be no Lupin. But the actor is the one that really draws your emotion out.
What did you just say?
Without the script, there would be no blueprint.
Oh, blueprint.
I thought he said lubricant.
That's what I thought he said. I'm like, what word was that?
Do you have potatoes and papas in your ears? Like, come on, guys.
She's nasty. We're going to cut her. But I'll give you an example. Jack Gleason. So Jack Gleason played King Joffrey, right? Joffrey Baratheon or Lannister, whatever you want to call him. He was a child out of incest on the show. Born out of incest. But... And people should know this by now because that was set in season two. But his character was so loathed and so hated that when he was killed off, even when people saw him out in the street, they would attack him verbally and say, and then he literally had to it got to the point that right now he's doing some interviews and he's got a couple of series out there in where he's saying that he really is considering not going back into acting as a result of the experience that he's had after leaving that show because of the way he portrayed that character. Mm-hmm. It's insane. But, good TV, good show. I encourage that you watch it. It's addicting. And then, you'll just be completely engulfed in it. But anyway, Game of Thrones is not what the show is about, people. We've got an author coming on. We've got so much that we need to talk about. Do we have a cocktail?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Christopher, I'm going to throw it over to you. I'm going to throw it over to you. We'll do our cocktail, and then we'll move into our first story, which is going to be shared by Nick.
Well, this suggested cocktail that we're not going to allow Tommy to indulge in, because clearly she's had enough.
Nasty.
Meanwhile...
In Canada!
Oh, you guys still have it. I'm kind of proud of you.
We're going back to the border. Yes,
exactly. Going back to the border. It's a simple cocktail. It's called the Canadian Cherry.
Of course it is.
It's something easy and sounded good. And I was like, I could work with this. It's kind of like a play on an old fashioned a little bit. It's like a poor man's / Canadian old fashioned. It consists of four simple ingredients. It's 1.5 ounces of Canadian whiskey, 1/2 ounce of cherry brandy, 1/2 ounce of fresh lemon juice, and 1/2 ounce of fresh orange juice. You pour all the ingredients into a shaker with ice, shake and strain into an old fashioned glass with fresh ice, and then pour a little cherry brandy on the rim of the glass.
Nice. Notice how he always says it's only four simple ingredients. They're always simple.
Well, I mean,
why is that?
Because he's simple.
Those are simple.
Okay, I'll take it.
It's not like we're making like freaking rosemary bitters or something like that from scratch. I mean, they come from a bottle, or you squeeze them from a flute.
Fruit. Okay. Anyway, so that's our cocktail.
I've been listening to flute concertos all day. The word jumped in.
That is our suggested cocktail for today. So
the cherry Canadian.
A cherry Canadian. Make sure you check it out if you guys want to.
Different from the Canadian cherry
that Chris, you know, broke on his way to Canada the last time.
One time. Well, twice.
Twice. Proud of you.
One was my name, so it was weird.
Okay. Well, so we have a story that we're going to cover before we bring our guest on board. And this one comes to us from the land of Trish. So, Nick, tell us.
Welcome to my land.
There's a travel ban.
You know,
she's on the Trump travel ban.
Finally, somebody can thank Trump for that travel ban.
Yes.
I never thought I would say that. But so this article actually came out April 10th. But I hadn't seen it, and I'm like, how did I not? Because there's a new Colonel Sanders for KFC,
and he is
a daddy. He is not your mother's Colonel Sanders. Let me tell you.
I mean, eventually he will be, but not today.
No, but it's so funny that their post. So. I'm going to read this part and then we can talk about it. So if you're looking for some help kicking your homophobic Chick-fil-A habit, look no further than KFC, who sent the internet into a tizzy when it announced its brand new Colonel Sanders, who happens to be a CGI Instagram influencer with a six-pack, tattoos, and a coif of silver hair.
And boy, is it silver. It's like Targaryen silver.
He is, one, a gorgeous.
He is.
And two, like, I'm not sure you're selling chicken, honey. Like,
well, he certainly got the thighs down, right?
But it's interesting. It's like KFC went the like complete opposite of Chick-fil-A, right? They're now focusing on the liberal demographic.
Which is good. I mean, it's good for their business. It's good for their bottom line. And let's face it, it's like...
Pun.
Bottom line.
I know, right?
I love a good pun.
No, but I mean, first of all, the man is hot, and I have a thing for salt and pepper and hair, and his hair is just like silver, like perfectly like done, and he's just gorgeous. And when you think about it, when companies like this take an initiative to go out of their way to poke fun of putting someone so sexy and hot and making fun of other businesses that are being derogatory and being so you know, defamatory to our community. I mean, it just goes to show you that for every one business that says, no, we don't want to cater to the homosexual community or the LGBT community, we have other businesses that decide that they want to go out of their way and make sure that we know that they're welcome, that we are welcomed.
I don't even, I mean, like, obviously they had some inkling to, like, promote for the LGBT community with this stunt, right? But I mean, like, this is pretty much relatable to a lot of people. This man is hot.
Yes, fuck. He is.
So it doesn't matter if you're gay or straight or whatever. He's a fucking hot man.
And I mean, let's face it, as you said, you know, this is a stunt and it's aimed to
It's a marketing ploy, right?
Cause stir and make money in the end. So
what's interesting though too is that like I didn't realize this in 2015. McDonald's launched their new Hamburglar, and it's kind of similar because this guy is like a sexy daddy, but he's a suburban dad. He's a hipster Y suburban dad, and the internet went crazy over it.
But
I never saw anything about it. But so now we've got Colonel Sanders and the Hamburglar that are just like hot as fuck.
Yeah, well, you got to be careful with what the internet deems, you know, what they throw at you, because y'all remember that very hot, we talked about it on the show when it first came out, the very hot, like, convicted felon that had his picture, and then all of a sudden it just went viral, and the next thing you know, he comes out of jail and he's got a modeling contract?
No.
This was, like, I believe year one of our show, and I don't remember the man's, but he was gorgeous, had big, beautiful, like piercing, like light eyes. And he was dark and gorgeous. And we were just like, whoa. And it's like, what the hell did you do? I don't care what you do. I'll marry you any day. I'll go to jail.
No, I care what he did.
Oh, well.
Just saying, I do.
He didn't do anything too serious, it's my understanding. But when he got out, he ended up getting a contract.
But also, what's important to take from this is not only his looks, of course, but it's also his message. And he was saying, quote, I may be a restaurant mogul and international inspiration. And then he goes on to say, for me, it's about being in the kitchen and making amazing fried chicken. Never lose the things that make you who you are. So he cares about, okay, he looks creepy as fuck.
That being said,
sorry, not the person. Tom just showed me the picture of him. No, he looks like a more alien form of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Oh, he's just gorgeous. Anyway.
I mean, I completely get his message, but also the picture of him lifting up his shirt, I'm like, I see what your real message is, because I know you love cooking, but you still want them followers.
That's
and
you still want to market. What's cooking, good looking?
Yeah, you still want to market that KFC. That being said, I'm pretty sure KFC isn't actually real chicken, but
I have no comment.
That's a story for another time.
It's a chicken byproduct.
Well, I mean, it could be. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? But either way, he's hot. That's all we have to say about that.
Well, I mean, we had more to say about that than him being hot, but sure, we can go with that.
Yeah, sure. So, all right, listen, it is us. I know time flies when you're on Prozac.
Actually,
I don't understand this.
We have like 4 minutes, and I just want to mention one other thing, which is completely separate.
Okay, you got one.
Our own Patrick Riley, who was in Afterglow.
That's right.
Released a song, which I actually didn't even know Pat could sing, on SoundCloud. We're going to put it on the, what?
You didn't know that he can sing? Okay, go ahead.
Well, I mean, we never heard him sing. Yeah. We saw him live on stage, and he was fantastic.
And naked.
Yeah, awesome. Well, it wasn't going to that aspect, but yes, he was fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he was. It was pretty great.
But anyway, so he released a new song called Time on SoundCloud, and it is really wonderful. We will put the link in our post tonight, but you should definitely check it out. Hopefully I will hear back from him and we'll be able to play it on the show.
Fair warning, it's going to be a loaded post. There's a lot of really amazing information on
lots of things to click on.
Yes. Also,
damn, Trish is going to be busy because I got a paper due tomorrow.
No, I'm done. I already did it all.
Are you done with that?
Because
one?
I don't trust you. What?
Are you done with?
Can yeah, I just wanted to okay. give him a plug.
Where are the signs? Where are the signs?
Somewhere. Anyway.
Can I get a fuck her?
No! Fuck you!
Fuck her!
What did you just say? You literally show up when, you know, at like 7:15.
When I get out of college.
And then you're like, oh, well then,
When I get out of college.
I don't give a shit.
Oh, God. All right, listen. This is a perfect time.
She didn't have to go to Long Island this weekend. She could have wrote her paper.
I did. I worked on homework over the weekend, by the way.
All right, we're going to fight now. Let's fight. Let's go.
We are fighting.
Yeah, we're fighting. Let's go.
What's the probability that I might strangle you?
What's the probability that I might cut your dick off?
Probably 0.055371.
Yeah, it's a nice penis. I'm not going to do it.
Tom, please cut the fucking beginning off.
Here we go. So I want to give a quick shout out to Tim and his hubby. They are our newest additions to our Patreon family. Thank you for your support and for becoming a Patreon. We do truly appreciate your patronage, and we hope that the show continues to deliver and bring you content that you enjoy and that makes you feel good. So thank you for joining us. And with that, we are going to leave you with some music. When we come back, we've got both of our guests, Hans M. Hershey and Vance Bastian, and we're super excited because we've got a lot of information to throw at you. So here we go. We'll be right back.
If you need my hands to pull you up above the earth, well, I will lift you up to show you just how much you're worth. 'Cause we need to be loved. So we need to be loved. If I had you here, I'd wear your heart just like a crown. For me
All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, from the break. That was the incredible Anthony Starbo with We Need to Be Loved. I freaking love that song. It's just so amazing. But anyway, joining us now all the way from the land of Oz, like I like to say, is our incredible friend Hans M. Hershey.
Hey, I'm
don't start. Don't start. To discuss his latest addition to The Golden One, a fantasy trilogy, and also joining us as the narrator of that same series, and also the host of the Rote podcast, Vance Bastian. Boys, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Good morning, Hans. How are you?
Tired.
I can imagine.
As always, when I call you guys.
Yeah, I know. We make you call in at 2 o'clock in the morning your time, and we appreciate your efforts.
It'll get easier. It'll get easier.
You look great. Thank you, Chris. You look great. I don't get a thank you?
What the fuck? Well, you'll get a gift later.
It's not your fault we're an hour late, right?
No, well, not at all. Not at all. But we also have...
An hour late? Oh, no, that's him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Okay, yeah. No.
And we also have Vance Bastian with us, who narrated. Did you narrate both of his books?
Yes, I did.
And you're going to be narrating the third one as well?
Oh, I hope he brings me back.
Oh, look, he's praying on the other side. And I'm sure that Nick will love to hear your voice. He says that you have an amazing voice and that you've done such a wonderful job narrating Hans' work. And so we're here because we have a new book.
Did I say that to you?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, Trish's lack of literacy keeps you in business. So that's fantastic.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Ouch. Says the guy who hasn't read any of them.
Fact. I read the Korean one. Almost all of it. But I made Buttigieg, so...
I rest my case. I mean, what's the point of reading a book almost, and then you miss the end? It's like...
Eh. Bitch, I met you in New York. We had dinner together. Oh, we are friends.
Okay, so we're all fighting right now, but the real reason you're on is to talk about the Golden One series, which is amazing. as our listeners know and Hans knows, I've listened to the first two books. And yes, I listen to books because it's easier for me because I'm always doing chores while I'm like listening to them or they put me to bed and then I wake up to them, whatever. Doesn't matter. But they're amazing. And I want to talk a little bit about your inspiration behind them because I know that in the second book, at the end of the book, there's this little snippet of... I forget exactly what they said, but they were you were talking about the fact that you kind of left writing nonfiction books, and now you find the time to come back to it. And I want to talk a little bit about why you left and what brought you back to this specific story.
Well, I left writing nonfiction. I left writing fictional books a long time ago. So, and that had to do with the fact that I actually studied literature at the university. And when you study literature full time, you read a lot of books.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember we had to, I was about 30 novels a week, and you do that for a semester or six. And at the end of that period of time, you're like, I don't want to see a book ever again. Cause it's really stressful. So I barely read for 10 to 15 years. And then somehow, I'm not going to say how, somehow I came back into writing or reading. And as part of that, my desire to write at some point came back. And it was when we were pregnant with our son, I left the job about 3 months before he was born. And I knew that I wouldn't find a new gig in time before he was born. And so I said, you know what, let me see if I can pull a rabbit out of my hat or write this novel. And I did. And, you know, it's been, yeah, I never look back. And this is what, I think this was my 21st book. So.
Wow.
Mm. Well, I mean, I remember the book that launched Hans on our show, and that was Shorts, mm-hmm. Stories Beneath the Rainbow. And, you know, it was an amazing collection of short stories that happened to you know, surround itself with topics and individuals that were part of the community. And it was just absolutely beautifully written. And then our relationship just blossomed from there. And, you know, every other book that you've ever released, from Disease to all the other ones that you have that are under your belt, we've featured somewhat on our show. And I think that that it just goes to show that your dedication to your work and your craft, making a series like this, you know, starting with one book and moving on. And now in September, you're about to come out with the third and final book for this series. What does that feel like?
Talking to you again?
Yeah,
sure. Amazing. I actually remember our first night together. Believe it or not, I was sitting half naked in my bathroom because that was long before you guys had patrons and did live shows with webcams and stuff, before I had to actually put on my face in the middle of the night. So, you know, I was sitting in my underwear in my bathroom because it was the only quiet place in the house. So
Trish never got the hint, yeah. So good for you.
But yeah, I mean, back to the book. I mean, of course, it feels amazing to have that final piece come out. Being a writer is kind of weird because I'm already neck deep in my next couple of projects. So, and I'm still waiting for my publisher to send me back the edits for book number three, which will happen sometime this summer. So it's kind of weird because you're in this limbo somehow between projects, and then at some point I'll have to refocus on Jason and making sure he gets the proper send off.
Right.
But it'll be fun. Because the final book, it's always difficult. You know, this is my first trilogy which isn't just accidental. This is one I planned out from the beginning, that I knew that I was going to write three books, and that enables you to write in a different way because you know you don't have to squeeze everything into one book. Single title. And writing the first one was really, really easy. Writing the second one, which is the follow-up where you have to take things to the next level, you know, the first one is always about character development and getting to know, you know, everything and world building, since this is fantasy. And the third one is kind of like the climax, right? And we all like a good climax. So
we all.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Well, so it's like writing a symphony. I feel like the second one must be the most difficult. Would you agree? To draw a connection between the character development and then the climax.
It is. And not because I didn't think it was difficult to write, actually. It pretty much, all my stuff kind of writes itself. But what I found difficult was making it feel as good as the first one.
Yeah.
You know, when you I don't like to compare books to movies, but when we do that for a second, very often the sequel to a movie is crap, right? So, and there are very, very few exceptions. And as an author, you're always afraid that when you come out with a second book to follow up a first one, that it would not be as good as the first one. And so that was my biggest fear. And obviously that applies to book three as well. But I actually think that I did good. I mean, others will have to judge that, but I think I did pretty good. And the ending of the third book, which, by the way, Vance hasn't read yet, so he has.
I haven't read it either, so.
Well, I just want to redact the word difficult, because I feel like that wasn't the right term for it. It's more, perhaps the second book is the one that you might look back and second guess to make sure that it's a good transition to getting toward the climax.
It's like,
yeah, I don't know. This might apply to someone who actually knows what they're doing. my work is kind of weird because I'm usually the first one to read my books. When I write them, I have no idea what's coming. And there are scenes in the second one when I go back to it, and you know, during the editing and proofreading process, when you look at it and you go back and it's like, I can see my own internal struggle with the plot, where it was going, I can see that between the pages. Because I really never know. I mean, there's a character in the second book, the guy on the cover. And I've had some discussions with my publisher where we talked about, is he a good guy or is he a bad guy? Mm-hmm. And I don't think, I'm still on the fence with him. I'm still not sure what he ultimately is. And I think that's part of my own struggle when I was writing him, because I wasn't sure whether he was going to be a good person or a bad person. You know, because the villain in the book becomes very obvious fairly early on. And yeah, with her, it's kind of easy. With her, you know, she's the bad person. She's Jason's nemesis. She's the one who's going to make his life hell.
She's
not done yet, by the way. So,
God. So I want to take it back to the basics, because we're talking very broad right now. I have two. Mm-hmm. I want to bring Vance into the conversation, but I want to ask you: can you just give us a brief overview of what this story is about, what the arc is about, and then also Vance, what drew you to this? I know that you were brought in, I think, by Hans, but what made mm-hmm. you commit to this story? Because there are LGBTQ plus themes within the story itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just briefly. So the story is about a 17-year-old West Midwestern kid called Jason. He is of Mexican and Portuguese descent, so he is
gorgeous,
100% Latino. And he is your average teenager. He belongs to the invisible crowd. He belongs to he's the kind of kid that nobody really sees in high school. You know, if you've ever been to a high school reunion and, oh, we were in class together, I don't remember you. That kind of kid. And one day he wakes up and remembers a very strange dream he's had. And he finds out that he's not like everybody else, that he has special powers that were given to him by what we learn is Mother Nature, then that he has to save the world. And that he's not alone. So he has a classmate who approaches him and shares that news with him, which kind of has him, yeah. And that's pretty much what book one is all about, Jason discovering who he is. And then in the second book, he actually moves on and starts to save the world. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is a very good description of where we are right now in the series. It's pretty... Honestly, I love the book, so I could go on and on and on. But Vance, tell me a little bit about what draws you to the story. And yeah.
There are several things. One, I genuinely like Hans. We've interviewed him on our
Hold
podcast.
Hold on, pause. I'm sorry. You literally high, just sir? Started talking, and I have to be like, hold on. You generally like Hans?
Are you okay?
Genuinely.
I'm sorry, you were saying we love Hans.
Yes, and he's been on our podcast multiple times. So when he approached me, I was
she's
going
cheating
to do whatever
on us?
He asked me to do.
Sorry.
Please continue.
What did I miss? I'm sorry.
All right, so Chris said Hans is cheating on us.
I think he just has so much love in his heart, there's room for everybody.
I'll accept that.
All right. Thing two, though, as a voice actor, I really wanted to do animation, character series, video games, and Hans's book let me do animal voices.
Yeah.
I'm like, yep, I'm in. Absolutely. But part three, our podcast is all about LGBT works. I mean, that's our focus of the podcast. And so he's writing something for LGBT youth. And I absolutely 100% that as well.
You froze a little bit.
Which words did I not get out?
LGBT, and then it froze.
As well.
So our show is also about LGBT authors, and Hans wrote a book for youth, and I'm 100% behind that message as well.
That's amazing. So Hans, can you talk a little bit about how you thread gay characters into this piece and why that's so important to you?
It's just basically it's the starting point of all my books. It's not the most. It's not always the focal point, and particularly with this one, I try to frame it in a way where it's not the centerpiece, because what happens with young adult novels with younger protagonists is often that they end up turning into coming out novels, because that's usually the focus of being 16, 17 years old, is struggling with your own sexuality. I wanted, for Jason, I wanted that to be in his past. So he's out. So it's not a big deal. And I purposely framed it in a way where people who don't know, I don't use the word gay or LGBT at all in the first book. So during the entire first book, people can read this as a straight novel, as just any straight novel or young adult book. You have no idea that Jason is gay. And I did that purposely to kind of throw people for a loop when they open book two and Jason actually comes out to us. But for him, it's being gay for him is not a big deal. It is a big deal in relationship to some of the people around him, like his mom, who's raising him. She's a single mother who raises him. And it's not because his mother is particularly homophobic, but she's, you know, a mother, and they want us to be happy. And so there's an element of conflict there. That I'm exploring, but there's also other characters. There is a Jason forms a band of friends. There's five of them who take on, you know, this enemy together. And one of the girls, she's in a relationship with another woman during the entire, basically pretty much from the time we meet her. So there's and then there's more. So I'm not going to. But, tell you everything, but it's just kind of like always the focal point of all my books. All my main characters are always LGBT, simply because I think we don't have enough stories with LGBT heroes. And what I write is I write a lot of different stories, so it's not just one kind of story that I write. I write all kinds of different stories, you know.
And it's bringing visibility to not only, you know, gay youth, you know, women and men, but it also tackles another huge issue that we talk about on the show all the time, and that's being gay in different ethnic backgrounds. And I think that the way you wrote the story, obviously the story, there's so much magic and beauty within it, but there is this like element of how ethnicity plagues gay individuals and coming out. And I was very interested in why you picked those individual ethnicities to talk about within your story. And I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about that.
It's part of life. I mean, you know, I walk out the door and I see those ethnicities. It's not a big deal. It's just there, you know. There's Black people, there are Indian Americans. I mean, the story plays out in the U.S., so it's nice to keep that in the back of your mind. So, but whenever I visit the U.S., you know, I see African Americans, I see Indian Americans, I see Native Americans, I see Asian Americans, I see the whole spectrum of life. I mean, just looking at the three of you, I mean, four. Sorry, Vance, but I mean, it is what it is. You know, the U.S. just like most of the world today is multicultural, multi-ethnic. So it just, and to me, it feels weird to write books that wouldn't be that way. And sometimes my characters throw me for a loop. I mean, when I started writing the Korean book, as Chris calls it,
I knew, I was like, that's at me. I get it. Okay.
I had no idea that my character, when I wrote the first chapter, it took me a while before I realized, wow, you know, he's not white. You know?
Right. That's one of the things that I gravitated toward when it caught me the moment when you said that he was African-American. I stopped for a second. I was like, wow, I just envisioned him as a white man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's something
we know from research into books, that white people are so overrepresented in writing,
right,
and not just writing, but as characters in books, that even people from different ethnicities turn characters white. Mm-hmm. Unless it's specifically stated that, no, he's Korean or he's Chinese or he's Mexican or he's Ecuadorian or whatever. Unless you specifically say where a character comes from, people will automatically whitewash them. Even people who are not white, which is kind of scary. So as soon as a character reveals himself to me or reveals themselves to me, I try to at least give that little morsel and say, okay, you know, picture this, you know.
Right, and I just want to point out, it's Return to the Land of the Morning Calm, not that Korean book.
Yeah.
Well, so wait, wouldn't you agree, though, that within marginalized ethnicities, coming out is more difficult. And I think that you represent that in a way that's important because there are a lot of people that feel as though they can't come out because of their family's religious background or ethnic background. And I was wondering if you both would want to speak a little bit about what that means and why it's so important to show these ethnicities in the book and tell their story so that other kids of those ethnicities feel like they have a story out there for themselves.
Vince, you want to take that one first?
Sure. We've had several authors who write YA novels on our podcast, and they've all mentioned the same thing. We're all looking for the hero like us in a book. And if every hero is white, Lutheran, boring, you know, Vance, then there's nothing out there for everybody else. But that's just it. We're not all white. And so we need to see heroes like ourselves in novels so that we can feel like, hey, I can grow up to be a hero. I can save the world from nuclear disaster. I can, you know, save XYZ. Because that's what we look for. Every time I open a book, I look for somebody like me. It's just what I do.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And you know, one of the things, and I wanted to say this before we move on into other topics of the series, but one of the things that I appreciate most about the books that you write, Hans, is the fact that when you start writing your books, we don't know the ethnicity of the character right away, at least not instantly. And as you start reading along, you start to develop some of the characteristics of the geographical locations that you decide that you want to write about. Like, you know, you've written books, for example, in Westchester County, New York, and you've written books in Southeast Asia. And so the beauty of it, though, regardless of where you're writing, is you always develop characters that typically are not your typical white characters in books that you see, and you're not afraid to take a risk and write about other ethnicities because you do really great research. You even came to the U.S. and you went and visited the area that you researched to write your last book that you had, talked on the show about, which to me is great dedication. And I think that what you do is, in a way, is that you serve justice to the culture of the people that you're writing about and the sentiment that involves being part of that culture and immersing yourself in it. And I appreciate that, you know, as a minority, as a Latino, I appreciate the fact that I could open up any of your books and at some point find myself in that book.
And furthermore, I feel, I believe you said you spent time in South Korea or Japan prior to writing the novel that I had just mentioned as well. So yeah. You really were expanding.
Yeah. I do that for all of my books, extensive research. And sometimes it does require me to travel. With Korea, the situation there was special in the way that I had been to Korea three times already, twice on business and once on a personal trip. Because the novel plays out in the 50s, or most of the parts of the book that play out in Korea play out in the 50s, when I had been to Korea, I had been in the present. And I did not spend as much time in museums and going through old, you know, relics and stuff that I needed. Writing books is really weird, you know, sometimes. And I think the weirdest example is for a book that actually plays out here in Sweden. I needed, in a sentence, where a family travels like 200 miles through a barren winter landscape in the car. I needed the kids to be busy. And this particular scene plays out in the 1980s. And I wrote the scene and I was like, you know, they can play on their Game Boys. And suddenly it struck me, did they have Game Boys back then or did they not? So I ended up spending half an hour or 45 minutes online trying to find out when that particular Game Boy that I had in mind for the kids to be playing in that sentence, whether it actually existed or not. And in the end, it worked. But I spent an hour for two words or three words. And I think that's something that happens quite a lot. And so the same thing happened with the Korean trip. I ended up needing little morsels of information that I just couldn't find. I couldn't find them online. I didn't get in touch with Korean veterans, or they wouldn't respond because, again, they're all in their mid-80s and they're not as fast and nimble online and on social media as we are. And I just couldn't find it. In the end, I just had. The only way to solve that puzzle was for me to travel to Seoul and do research on site. I don't always do that. Like the trip to upstate New York didn't actually take place until the novel was released. That was a Christmas. But because I wasn't able to, I didn't have to go there because the pieces that take place were fairly simple and they're made up, or, you know, I used online research tools. But I wanted to make sure that it works, you know, and having seen, it's kind of a hobby to be able to travel to places that I describe in my books. I know I'm going to visit Jason's hometown. I mean, it's in the book there, or in the books, the hometown has a name, but it doesn't exist. But I know it exists because I've placed it on the map. I know what state it's in. And I'm, you know, if you read the book, you can kind of triangulate it because Denver International is mentioned. So from the airport, you can kind of triangulate what area of the country the book plays out in. But, you know, I've seen pictures of the high school. I know exactly what the parking lot looks like in order to be able to actually write the book. You know, that's thanks so cool. To maps, online maps and that kind of stuff that helps us a lot these days.
So I want to kick it over to Vance because, you know, you're patiently sitting there waiting, but I'm curious as to one thing. So we have the books literally as of September, we're going to have a complete series. We're hoping that you would narrate the third book, but can you talk about the experience of narrating the first and second books? How did you get involved in narrating books to begin with? I mean, was it something that you sought out, or is it something that you stumbled into?
No, I'm going to give credit to another author named Angel Martinez for connecting all my dots. I had been working at a nonfiction publishing house, publishing history specifically, as a production editor. I was the guy who put books together. So I hired the cover designer. I hired the typesetter. I worked with marketing to get it out into the world. Aside from that, I've been acting since I was 5 in mostly the community theater kind of stuff, and started the podcast that I was on. Angel was one of our first guests. And she said to me, with all of these things that you do, would you like to narrate my book? And I said, yes, yes, I would. Absolutely. And it just sort of snowballed to where I'm doing this full time now.
That's awesome. So how labor intensive is it? I mean, how many hours would you say you spent in a studio narrating a book and reading and doing take after take to get it just right?
And furthermore, how much time do you have to prepare, like to make sure that you're ready to sit there and read it and not stumble over words? Like, it must take preparation time.
Like we do over our next.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like any acting gig. And I think, Nick, you're the actor?
No. I have acted. I work in theater.
Okay.
She was an extra.
Script preparation is a thing. I take a novel. I highlight each character that needs a distinct voice. I highlight them in a separate color. With Hans, a couple of them, I think I ran samples by him first to see if he liked the voice, and then sat down to narrate it. I don't generally have too many retakes unless the authors pointed out something that I missed or a voice they just end up not liking. I don't generally stumble over reading text too badly. Thankfully, I've worked with a couple international authors who've all been very clear about my fast American speech needing to be slowed down a little bit.
Not me.
No, that wasn't you. But it was a thing. And when you slow down your speech while you're reading text, you start to pump up your accuracy. It gets a little better. So to kind of answer your question, script prep is pretty quick, all things considered. The actual narration is real time. And then about, for every hour of narration, there's about an hour and a half of editing to bring it up to ACX quality. So for every hour you hear, between 3 and 4 hours of work.
That's amazing. So one more question on that. So yeah, you mentioned absolutely. That you would go through the script and you would highlight different characters in different mm-hmm. colors to do different voices or different types of voices. Do you do voices? Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of something of that nature?
Of course. I mean, there's an old woman in Hans's book, and she was quite fun. Let's see, the guy on the cover. For him, I had to practice James Earl Jones. So,
he's East African, in case you don't know that.
Right.
How do you
with Hans's books? It was kind of easy because there's an acting technique where you assign your character an animal trait, and then the character comes from that. With Hans's books, the animal traits were already assigned, so I just had to figure out voices. I think one of my favorites still is the grub in book one, because I get to talk like this, and grub work is really fun. And I know it probably wasn't Hans's favorite, but I liked it.
So how many voices would you say in total did you do? Because you're narrating the whole book, right? So you've right. got it really like, and how do you keep that all in your head? All these different characters. Well,
oh, no. I have a notes file.
Oh, of course.
Where character name, I just for Hans's books, it's just character name and animal, because that's all I need to kick into their voice. But I think each character got distinct. I mean, even some of mm-hmm. Jason's friends, you know, like one is a Raven, but he's also a big Colorado football player. So for him, I just slowed down a little bit. But they all got a distinct voice. So 20 distinct character voices in that book.
And the impressive part is you have these animal voices and then you kick yourself back to the narration and then you always can change between these voices and being the narrator. That's what's mm-hmm. something that must be so fun to explore when you're narrating a novel.
It really is, actually. I have to admit that I love my day job finally, and it only took 4 years to get there.
That's proud of you. That's amazing. Well, congratulations. I mean, writing for this man here, I'll tell you. I mean, excuse me. Narrating for this man, I can imagine is an experience, because just knowing him alone, I mean, he's just so extraordinarily like frank with you, right? We've developed a relationship with Hans that has spanned the better part of over 2.5 years, and we certainly appreciate when he gets in his funny mode, as I call it, because we just have such a good time in our conversations.
And I don't know if you've ever had to wake him up at 2 o'clock in the morning, but it's just delightful.
we've always managed to somehow find a time that's near the end of his day but the beginning of ours. And because I work in a home studio, I don't have to go anywhere. I have that flexibility.
That's amazing. So, Hans, let me flip the question to you. So we now know how he does his narrating and what he does to prepare himself and what he does to be able to remember different characters. So what happens when now the final product is there and you get it and you start listening to it? What goes through your mind?
Well, actually, I get the product before it's final.
Okay.
So for pretty much for every chapter that Vance narrates, he sends them to me. So we're using ACX, which is an Amazon company, to publish those books. And through their backbone system, I have to approve every chapter. So as the producer, I have to approve them all. And so I listen through every chapter he sends to me. Seeing if it's okay. You know, I mean, as just like I make a lot of mistakes when I write my books, sometimes there are tiny little things that voice actors miss. And the funny thing with Vance is I've yet to find a place where he misses the text, where he reads it the wrong way. But sometimes it's in the cutting, you know, it's in the after production of the actual narration where he has to, you know, cut together two pieces of narration into one, and he misses a word and one word is superfluous. So I listen through all of that and I go back, and I think for Deceit, I think we had like four changes in 24 chapters. It wasn't, it was really not much, but I have to listen through all 7 or 8 hours of narration and approve it. So
out of all the voices that he's done for narrating your books, both mm-hmm. you know, with Deceit and Blooming, what is your favorite voice, your favorite character that he does?
I would say I love Sarah. I love the way he does Sarah. And she's the villain.
His reaction is brilliant.
it's kind of weird because I'm one of those few authors who actually likes to do readings. So when I go to conferences and stuff, I usually sign up to do a reading because I just love reading to my readers. I've always enjoyed doing that. However, I don't do voices. So I'm just plain narrating. But because this is fantasy and because you have the animal characters and, you know, you have humans from different societies, there's one lady from Japan. There's, you know, obviously the guy here on the cover for book two who's from Ethiopia. And then you have Indian Americans, you have the Latinos. So you have people with different backgrounds where you could potentially play with accents. And then you have all the animal characters. And I mean, he's had to do elks, he's had to do raccoons, he's had to do mice and moles and God knows what, you know. And so that, and foxes and yeah. Mm-hmm. I was really looking forward to the elk, but and Keith Kachuk was turned out really, really, I really liked the way he did him justice. But I personally love Sarah the villain because there's just, you know, it's kind of, it's when you can actually hear the evil in the voice, you know, it's, and
I because hear she, evil in you the know, voice. She's,
we talked about that earlier when like a character can really make you feel that they're evil. That shows how well someone is acting.
And I probably shouldn't tell you how I came up with the voice.
You probably should. it's dramatic. It makes for good podcasting. Go for it.
imagine a hybrid of Eartha Kitt as Catwoman and a Kardashian.
Oh, that works. That totally works.
Jason, are a bug. I will squash you.
I love that's that. Sarah.
Heard that before. But it's interesting though, because like the villain character is villain to a group of people but not the mass, and the way you portray her in one instance is completely different than the other.
Because she has a Stepford side. She's got this little Stepford wife like thing that she hides behind.
And it's like, it's crazy how you can, I can't fathom sitting there, in my head, I see you reading something, pausing, taking a minute, and then going back when she's switching back and forth or you're switching characters. Is that how you actually work through it? Like, because it's like, you're literally like going from Stepford wife to I'm going to kill you.
Because of the script prep I mentioned earlier, I don't usually have to pause too much. For Kisakalchuk, the elk, I have to, because his voice is so deep, I have to stop, take a breath, clear my throat. But for Sarah, I can just offer you a plate of cookies and then eat your soul.
You know, not for nothing, but you just described probably yourself in that whole scenario.
Okay, I'm not as evil amazing. As her, but I am a little bipolar.
Yeah,
definitely. Aren't like we all? Aren't with we the all?
Yes.
So, Hans, the book is going to come out September 20th. 19th. I was close.
19th. Close. We do Thursdays. Don't ask me why, but my publisher loves Thursdays. So
hey, listen, Thursdays is good. It's good to have a drink, have a cocktail, read a book. You get ready for the weekend. It's good for all those amazing things. So it's coming out on the 19th. It's a Thursday. Yep. Will you be doing any events around that area, whether out in Europe or in the U.S.?
Yes, I've got two major events planned this fall. I'll be attending Outright in Washington D.C. the first weekend of August. That's already confirmed and everything. Air ticket is purchased, and I'm just waiting to get a hotel room. And I'm hoping to do the Rainbow Book Fair in New York in October.
Please, it's supposed isn't to be that what you did when we met with you?
Exactly. And
I remember things. Okay.
Me too. Now let's not rehash all that. but yeah. And with the Rainbow Book Fair, we don't, you know, I've heard two different dates in October. It's supposed to be the 10th anniversary to commemorate Stonewall and everything. And it's, you know, but yeah, the organizers are usually last minute. And for someone who has to fly in from Europe and get airfare and all that done early on, it's a bit frustrating, but yeah, let's hope for New York in October. So, and if I do, I think I've been talking to my lovely princess Nicholas that I would try and come up and see you guys.
That would be amazing.
In studio, it'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you wouldn't even have to like book a room or anything.
You could sleep on Tom's floor.
I would give you the floor before I gave Hans the floor. You can have a bed, a very comfortable one. Thank you.
That's not nice.
Well, you weren't nice these either.
So wait, before we wrap this up, I know that it's not about the book. We love the series. It's amazing. I love it. And again, I recommend it to everybody out there. But Vance, you are a podcaster and you've been talking a little bit about it. And I would love for you have two podcasts. Is that correct?
Just one.
Okay. I was reading something about... Anyway, another story for another time. But do you want to talk a little bit about your podcast?
Certainly. I think I know the second one you're talking about was one I ended about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Where I was just doing a fiction podcast for a while, where I was practicing audio narration just to get better at the long form. Because, you know, sitting and narrating an audiobook takes a long time. Yeah. So that podcast, I closed. I'm done with it. So the ROTE podcast, which stands for Written on the Edge, specifically interviews LGBTQ authors about their written works. We've had a couple other storyteller types. We've had a couple musicians. We've had some book designers and cover designers. We've had some reviewers, but mostly it's authors. And we just wrapped episode 214. So we've been going for a while. It's a weekly podcast, hour long. Kind of deep dive into both the author's work, and then we ask some questions about them as a person so people can get to know them better.
That's really amazing. I'm definitely going to have to check it out because Hans slammed me a little bit for some of the stuff that I was listening to. And so I guess I need to broaden my horizons with our LGBTQ authors.
Well, and something I tell people is if you have a limited amount of time, but there's a genre of book that you really like, we do tag all of our episodes on our website. So you could find the episodes that deal with mystery or YA novels or, you know, just good old standard contemporary fiction. So like I said, if you're short on time and you just want to listen to ones that relate to the books you like to read, you can probably find them pretty easy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome. I did tell him, you know, prior to us getting on, we were doing a test call. So prior to our episode, and I said, you know, I know that you do a podcast because I saw it at some point, but I want to check out your work and I want to thank you for also checking out our work and enjoying it, even though we get a little crazy sometimes, you know, most times. And
a little.
Just a little, right? And then we also have crazy characters like Hans, who we absolutely love. I think that you have been one of our longest serving relationships on the show.
He surpassed Hartman.
You did.
Yeah, and, surpassed
Hartman. It just goes to show you that you know, we appreciate, first and foremost, the work that you do and the dedication that you have to our show.
Well, now feedback. I do. It took me a while to get there.
Yeah, no, yeah. They hated each other at first.
It was a love-hate. It was a love-hate.
I was just like, I couldn't. And so we're looking forward to, well, at least I am, to hearing a little bit more about your work and experiencing other LGBT authors as well, because I think that, you know, as I've always said, I say to Trish, I say to, or Nick, excuse me, and Chris and everyone, when I'm posting on our Facebook page or even on Twitter, I always say that, you know, visibility is our biggest weapon against injustice and discrimination. And as long as there's LGBTQ authors and people who are promoting LGBTQ work, I think that we're going to be okay. That I would see a future in where what we're going through right now will be less and less and less, as long as we continue to fight and push forward.
Vance, have you had a chance to have on the author of the Pride Flag series? Help me. What's the name
Robert
of it?
Sanders?
Robert Sanders. Yeah. And then the other one, the other Marlon Bundo, the kids' books.
Not interviewed either yet.
Oh, my God. I'm going to connect you with them. They were amazing interviews, yeah. And those books are so great for kids. So okay, I'm definitely going to connect you with them. All right.
He actually released another book about Stonewall, too, recently.
Well, it's a series. So it's a series of three. Right, yeah. And there's going to be one more coming out. And I can't remember exactly what it's about.
Okay. And that's lovely. We'll make the connection. But this is all about Hans and his book. Come on now.
I'm sorry. Hello. It's just like, I'm like, oh, his podcast.
Right. But it's about Vance, what he's doing as well. You know, no, he's narrating these things. I think it can lead to a further future to so, narrate these children's books.
The more and more I watch The View, the more and more I'm like, this is literally the gay view. We fight constantly.
We do. All the time. We do all the time. So I want to, we do need to
but
wrap
Trish
up the
is
show.
The, like Rosie, so we're just like, can you stop?
Oh.
Honey, I'm not Rosie. I'm Whoopi. I put y'all in line. Go on.
We do need to wrap up the show, but I wanted to give you guys an opportunity to whore yourselves out and tell us a little bit of where people can find you, your websites, Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. I want to start with Hans. Would you like to start first?
Okay. Well, find me. An easy place to find me is Facebook, obviously. I have my personal account there because, you know, I'm kind of WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. So you get a bit of my personal life along with my authoring stuff. So I just can't keep those things aside.
Which is why
separate,
we love you.
So. Sorry?
Which is why we love you.
Oh, thank you. And I have an Instagram account under Hans M. Hershey, easy to find too, where I post beautiful pics of nature, my walks and stuff. Kind of like for personal indulgence. I don't follow people who I am would be supposed to. So I don't follow authors or stuff. I just follow beautiful pictures. It's kind of like my personal indulgence. I have a YouTube channel, and I just opened up a Patreon account. Yay!
Proud of you. So
Hans Hershey, I already have my first couple of patrons. I'm so stoked. So super happy. So yeah, if you have an extra buck or two or five or 10 or 100, please send them my way so that I can continue doing what I do. But yeah, Facebook is usually an easy way to get me to find me.
That's amazing. And do you have the website still?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. It's just like a given. Hershey.se. SE stands for Sweden. So very simple. Yeah. Hershey.se.
And then you'll have all the listing of all his books and all his amazing works, which we featured on the show. And then, of course, for our friend Vance Bastian over on the other side of the recording here, whore yourself out. Tell us all about you, where we can find you, how we can get in contact with you.
All right. Well, vancebastian.com is the website. Audiobooks that I've narrated are there with some of the reviews and links to purchase. But I managed to get that name everywhere. So on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Vance Bastian, you'll find me.
I love it. We were having a conversation. He goes like, yeah, it's so basic. I know. But when he said, I asked him, I said, what is your Skype handle? And he was like, it's Vance Bastian. Yeah, I know. It's so,
original.
You made me giggle. I thought that was funny.
No, good for you. You nailed it. You got Vance Bastian down. You don't have to add any O's or anything like that. Good for you.
That's true. That is true. Although I do have to say it's not my birth name.
That's okay.
Fair. But the podcast I was mentioning, if you want to go search for an episode, it's Wrote Podcast, WROTE podcast.com. And the search feature is great.
And make sure that you listen to Hans' episode.
Hans has three episodes with us.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, last one was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So he was recently on the show, so make sure that you go check out that episode. And, you know, you'll hear a very nice one and then the crazy one that you're about to hear when we're done publishing today's episode.
Yeah.
Welcome to Gay Talk.
So different. That's us.
So, boys, I would like to thank you. First of all, Hans, thank you for taking time out of your evening and your sleeping regimen to stay up or at least get up and deal with us boys here in the U.S. Seriously. And
you're
Vance,
welcome.
I know that you're an hour behind us. So thank you for sticking around and tuning in. And know that you boys, we love you both. Thank you so much for being a part of our show. And Hans, for your continued support. And Vance, we look forward to connecting and
more collaboration.
Yeah, of course. Working together and cross-promoting and letting people know who you are as well as vice versa.
And absolutely. I'm happy to. Thank you, guys.
Thanks
All right, well,
for having
thank you,
us.
Boys. We're going to go ahead and wrap up the show, and we'll be published soon. And again, all of the information for everything that's been discussed here, including the series for The Golden One, will be posted on tonight's post. And, of course, links to the podcast for Hans Hershey, who was on The Road podcast, and all of the information for Vance Bastian's podcast as well. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Have a good night, guys. Or good morning.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys. Well, that was both Hans Hershey and, of course, Vance Bastian. They're amazing peeps. And I love Hans to death. Hans is just incredibly amazing. And so now we have more stuff. We have a few more things that we'd like to cover, bring it home, wrap it up, put a rubber on it, and all that good stuff. So I'm going to kick it over to...
Yeah.
What?
I put the rubber on it.
No, we're not putting a rubber on it. Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm just anticipating, thinking, future, you know, something like that. Anyway, Trish, help me out here.
I need you both to calm the fuck down tonight.
Okay. I need you to calm the
fuck
down.
I told you I was still buzzing from last night's episode of Game of Thrones.
I don't give a flying beep.
Okay. I'm buzzing from Canadian Cherry.
All right. Cherry so I just want to say that, the series, the Golden One series, I know I said it on air, it really is a great series, and it tackles issues of environmental change and environmental problems, but it's also tackling issues of race, LGBTQ individuals, youth, standing up for what you believe in. It's a beautiful fantasy novel series, and I really think that no matter what age you are, yes, it's geared for a younger audience, but no matter what age you are, it's tackling issues that are plaguing all of us, and it's a really important novel that kids and the younger generation can understand and relate to. And again, I just want to thank Hans for writing this and Vance for narrating it. It really is an important novel. It's not just fluff. It's an important
right.
piece of work.
And I think when you said narrating it, I believe you were meaning Vance.
That's what I said. Yes. Yeah. Vance narrating.
Oh, it sounded like Lance. Sorry.
No.
Anyway, regardless of that,
no more alcohol
of that, it's
her.
Important. Listen, bitch, I don't got no papas in my ears. No, at the end of the day, it's important to point out that there are people who are in our government and in many governments across the country or across the world that are equating weather with climate change, and that's just, they don't go together. You know, it's important to keep an eye on the environment. That is a proven fact that it's changing. There is a fact that in our nation, hate crimes are rising every day exponentially. And if you look at the events going on in California, there are so many things that need to be discussed, and someone who's reaching out in their artwork and discussing climate change, racial inequality, and issues of hatred, that's important. It needs to be talked about. It needs to be put out there to the public. It needs to be read.
Christopher.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch that because I could go on for days.
All right, so listen, we have a couple of more things that we need to do. So there's a story here. Did you want to go ahead and read the story?
No, I want to ask a question to Chris. How is weather and climate change not the same thing?
No, because... No, because
that's what confused me about that whole thing.
There's that's very simple. I mean, weather and climate change are not the same thing.
They're not the
like,
same
you
thing,
might
but
have
they're
rain. You
so
might have rain.
Climate change is affecting the weather, though.
Yes.
Okay.
But you might have rain one day, and then, like, you might have cold rain one day, and then the next day it's hot and fucking dry. But that has nothing to do with the fact that the climate globally is changing.
Correct. Okay. All right. I understand where you were going with that now.
Yes. Thank you. I was like, why are you looking at me like that?
All right, so we're back on track.
Yes.
Fantastic. All right, Nick, you have the story on the storyboard.
No, let's just close it out.
All right, so all right, let's go.
All right, so it's Mama Kim's time, so I'm gonna give it to her. So please time me.
I'm on it. I'm on it, Mama Kim. Oh. All right,
you're here.
I want Mama win, Mama Kim to win, but I want Trish to like fight for it. All right, ready? Go.
All right, so a police officer was suspended for anti-gay post on an article about a gay dead teenager. Number one. Number two, Canada unveils equality coin to mark 50 years since legislation of gay sex being legal. So that's amazing. And I can't really describe what it looks like, but anyway. So National Guard... National Guard leaders in five states defy Trump and refuse to dismiss trans troops after California announces in February that they would not discharge trans troops for more states having followed suit. So those are your stories from Mama Kim.
I mean, he nailed it time-wise.
Of course. But you know, there's always... do you know how many words I stumble throughout an episode?
The vocabulary was off, but...
Hold on! These have so many, like, tongue twisters in them.
I know.
I know.
Words are difficult when you're drinking.
Difficulties.
Exactly. I'm not even... I mean... I mean, is my first fucking drink.
I mean, Canada.
Canada's amazing, isn't it? But I do have to say this. So I know that we're reading these topics and we're trying to read all of these stories that Mama Kim sends us within a minute. But I also want to let you guys know that, you know, it's just not reading because obviously we can't give you a link over the air. Right. But we do provide these stories. We actually post the links on our post. So you can actually go to our post as we publish them every week and click on these links and read the stories for yourself so that you know the substance, the meat and potatoes right. of what's behind the story.
Absolutely. And it's so important to point out that Mama Kim, she calls in, she emails us every week and she sends these stories. Mm-hmm. She goes out of her way. So these stories are going to be there. So you can really look into them. Yeah, you know, Trish will be rushing through it, but that's just a spotlight how much support Mama Kim gives to us.
It's amazing.
But these stories will be there in their entirety, so you can go in through and read about these, and you can figure out, you know, how we can make a difference after that point.
Well, unless the content provider decides to pull the story, and then that's a different story. But anyway, so let's go ahead and move on. We've got two more things, and then we're going to bring this home. So the first one is, of course, our Gay Talk term.
All right, everybody, Trish. Your Gay Talk term brought to you, of course, by...
GayRealEstate.com
is Golden Boy. Golden Boy is a young man in the prime of his youth. The Golden Boy looks as though he has a promising future ahead of him. So this week's Gay Talk term is Golden Boy.
I love it. And it's also very appropriate, right? Because we've got the Golden One that's a part of the topic for today. And so the Golden Boy fits right in.
Yeah.
So Christopher, it's your turn.
It is indeed. On this day in gay history, brought to you, of course, by
GayRealEstate.com.
I feel like I have to sing that. I don't know why.
You should sing it. If you could say it, you could sing it, put a melody to it, and bring it. And now we're sued by Trey Parker and Matt Stone. Sorry. All right. So when on this day, April 29th, 1933,
Read that again.
1993.
Thank you.
I was like, wow, I said it right.
1933.
In the Federation of Russia, the Russian Federation, excuse me.
At the time.
Is
Russia a federation now?
It's the Federation of, it's the Russian Federation.
But it wasn't then.
No, it was.
It was?
Okay. Yeah, the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991.
Okay, yes.
So it's a Russian Federation.
Go for it.
Yes. Homosexual acts between consenting male adults were legalized in Russia. Boris Nikolaevich Yeltsin signs the new law in order to obtain a place in the Council of Europe, an international organization that promotes human rights, the rule of law, and democratic development. Though it was interesting because Boris Nikolaevich Yeltsin was incredibly corrupt, a huge alcoholic. You know, we're not running a nation, so we're allowed to drink as much as we do. And then he eventually stepped down and put on Putin to a pedestal and then led the now Russian Federation into a somewhat Soviet lifestyle where it's a totalitarian state where they are
where
they're retracting these freedoms and any kind of propaganda that they deem LGBT is illegal, and people will be persecuted, and in certain states of the Russian Federation, called to be executed. So it's an interesting change.
It just goes to show you that, you know, no matter what, depending on what country you're in, you know, certain gained freedoms can be taketh away.
They can be redacted.
Yeah. So that's, you know, pretty intense. All right. So listen, we're going to bring this home. First and foremost, I want to thank all of our Patreons, you know, because you guys are amazing. But that being said, if you love our show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By doing so, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your favorite device or web browser as soon as the episode is published. Again, I can't thank you guys enough, our Patreon supporters. If you would like to become a Patreon, you, our listeners, can do so by just going and pledging a donation of anywhere between a dollar or more. And all those donations are collected monthly and can be a, you know, anything you want. We greatly appreciate it. Christopher?
Yeah, next week, it's all about the dish.
Yeah.
We're excited for that. We love when we have, you know, it's the three of us just hashing it out, talking about any kind of stories that really impact our community nationwide and globally.
I'm going to need a lot of alcohol. And Nick?
Thank you to our guests, Hans M. Hershey and Vance Bastian from The Rope Podcast. Woo-hoo! For joining us on today's episodes. Links to Hans' books, website, social media will be available on tonight's post, as well as Vance's as well.
And of course, yeah, for the links for his podcast. Mm-hmm. Christopher?
Can we please put a rubber on it?
Yes, please. Go for it, honey.
Let's wrap it up. Alrighty.
Let's safely bring it home.
That's right. As always, our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under show and episodes. It is also available as a free download on iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher Radio.
Nick announces you can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0@gmail.com. Tom, take it away.
And if you need to reach out to us, you can just head on over to our website, click on the Contact Us tab. There you can actually leave comments, suggest topics, send a question for any one of these two crazies, and or submit a question for an individual host. You can also call us and leave us a voice message with your questions. We can answer those for you on the show. That phone number is 334-GAY-TALK, and if you need all the digits, it is 334-429-8255. Please do not forget that we do stream live every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. With that, I would like to say that is our show. You guys have a wonderful night, and bye!
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish. Wow, wow, wow.